listening to the Creative Pep Talk podcast. If you are a creative person, you know how easy it is to get lost on the creative journey. And that's why this show exists, to help you get back onto your path, back unlocking your creative potential. That is what this whole thing is about. I'm your host, Andy J. Pizza. Let's get into this episode. Quick shout out to the sponsors. Support for Creative Pep Talk comes from Adobe Max. Adobe Max is the annual global creativity conference and is going online this year, October 26th through the 28th of 2021. This is sure to be a creative experience unlike any other. Plus, it's all free. Yeah, 100% free. With over 25 hours of keynotes, luminary speakers, breakout sessions, workshops, musical performances, and even a few celebrity appearances. Okay, this is going to be a one-stop shop for inspiration, goal setting, creative tune-ups, all the like. Explore 300 sessions. So many sessions to choose from, 11 tracks, hear from amazing speakers, and learn new creative skills, all totally free online this October. Register by going to max.adobe.com. Shop, design, and sell custom fabric, wallpaper, and home decor on Spoonflower. If DIYing is your jam, Spoonflower is the destination for print-on-demand fabric, wallpaper, and home decor products. Visit Spoonflower.com and DIY all the live long day. Hey, we have a new Skillshare class out right now. This Skillshare class is about how to do a creative career in 2021. It's noisy out there. The algorithm is after you, man. You gotta do some things differently if you want to build a thriving practice. We laid out a whole journey step by step on how to do that using things like social media. Go check it out, skillshare.com/creativepep. Get a whole free month, free long trial, long free trials. Long John free trial is what they call it. What's happening? Go to skillshare.com/creativepep and you get a month long for free and you can take the class now. That's what I'm trying to say. Today on the show, we have none other than illustrator extraordinaire Rebecca Green. Rebecca has been a longtime friend of the show, and I've been wanting to get her on here for a long time because Rebecca's work is incredible. This illustration is kind of my favorite type of illustration, where it's kind of the iceberg thing of you. There's this part that you see, but you can just get this sense that there is so much depth in the richness, both it aesthetically, but also in the world building and the attention to detail and the love and care that's put into all of the characters. If you're savvy to the whole picture book world, you've probably come across some of her work. The How to Make Friends with a Ghost is deep, sad, beautiful, fun, you know, mystical, Becoming a Good Creature. Very, very gorgeous, that book. A Year with Mama Earth, a whole bunch of others. Go check out Rebecca on Instagram. It's a great add to your feed. She just has one of the most visually rich Instagrams on the platform, at Rebecca Green Illustration. Not to mention, I don't know if there's much more of a kind of huge flex, like the fact that Holbein, their new packaging for the gouache paint, has Rebecca's artwork on it. It's like, I own the medium. And I really, she probably wouldn't like me saying that, but I really feel like she does. Like the layers and the analog textures that are going on in this work are just to die for. I was so inspired by this chat. I hope Rebecca comes back on. I think I'd love to have her back on the show because I think she really represents a bunch of the qualities that we talk about week in and week out. You know, things like staying in tune to your inner creative voice and how to pay attention to that and find it and listen to it and trust it. I just think that there's just so much to take away from this. So I'll shut up. Here it is. My chat with illustrator Rebecca Green. thank you for doing this. I am so excited to have you on the show. I've wanted to have you on the show for a long time, actually.
Thank you. Likewise. You know what? Yeah, I listen to the show all the time, spent hours and hours and hours listening, so it feels very crazy to be talking to you and be on it. It feels very meta. So I'm pumped.
Really nice. And you go by Becca or Rebecca?
Yeah.
Okay,
Becca. Yeah, either, but yeah, Becca.
Can I call you Becca? It seems like,
yep,
is that a
please
friend
do.
Thing? Okay.
Please.
Okay. So I have a bunch of questions, but I thought, really, I feel like you've very legitimately lived a hero's journey of going from someone who, and correct me, any of these facts that are wrong, you correct me.
Okay.
But going from someone who grew up in Michigan, mm-hmm. who, with parents that didn't go to college, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to ending up being this illustrative storyteller living and working in Japan, like that, and I know you're back. Now you're all, mm-hmm. you've done the return. That's the,
yes.
that's the yes. full hero's journey. Like you have, like, I know that means you've got some elixirs to share. Like you have picked up some stuff along the way. And so I'm very excited to dive into all that. And I thought, why don't we just start back all the way to the beginning of wanting to become an illustrative storyteller. And I'm curious, what illustrative storytelling or story or illustration hit you so hard as a kid that you went from wanting to just be a consumer to wanting to participate in this thing? Like, what were the things, what were the picture books or the illustrations or the stories that hit you so hard you're like, I want to do stuff like that, or I just want to pick up a pencil and draw this, or whatever it was. What were the big ones for you?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I will say, like, I feel like I am not, like, I feel quite inadequate as a storyteller. I feel like I internalize moments and events and connections to people, and then that's what propels me. But, like, as far as telling a well-rounded story, I just feel like I almost feel like a fraud in the storyteller sense, but I do feel like, you know, I've been drawing forever, and I do remember specific, I remember on the back of my dad's Reader's Digest was these, Chris Payne. Is that his, Chris Payne?
Yeah. I know Chris Payne. Yeah, he actually taught at the school here, that I taught
awesome.
A class at. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I would see his illustrations on the back of the Reader's Digest. And I was like, oh my gosh, somebody draws pictures for a job. Like he has his pictures on a thing. And I just remember thinking that was so cool. And then the books in the library, I was just definitely like a repeat book. Like I would just check out the same book from the library, like, you know, every week, which was Garfield's Thanksgiving. And
yes, I love this.
And,
is that the same one that inspired like the TV special? Do you know?
I don't know. Maybe.
Okay. Because I definitely
maybe I'll have to look into it. Yeah.
You tell me, because that was a big deal in my childhood.
Okay.
But keep going.
Okay. And then another book that I remember was it's called Bony Legs by Joanna Cole, and it's illustrated by Dirk Zimmer. And that one just has so many little hidden details in it, so many like little hidden animals that are kind of telling the side story within the story. But I feel like I'm just starting to recognize some of the patterns in my work now. And then I'm like, oh my God, I've always been drawing that. I've always been looking for that, and I never kind of put those pieces together. And those things are pretty simple, but those things are celebration and family and food. And so they're not necessarily like these epic stories. And so it's just been interesting kind of being in the picture book industry, feeling like, wow, I'm not really a storyteller. And what am I like trying to actually say? And yeah, so it's been kind of interesting going back to that. And also one more thing is that as a kid, I was obsessed with elves, like Christmas elves.
Yeah. So, I think I've seen you talk about this on Instagram at some point.
It's just kind of like a random thing. And I remember being with my friend Sam, and I was like, can we just pretend we're elves and we're like fixing toys? I was like, we would just like sit in here with all these toys, pretend they're broken and we're fixing them. And I think she was like, this is not very fun. But for some reason, I love that idea of, I don't know, I guess making things and you're like in this community and then you're sharing them with people.
Yeah.
It's taken me a really long time to figure out like why that's fascinating to me, or, you know,
Can you tell me, I think I understand, but I just want to dive deeper on why do you think that is? Why is that fascinating and important to you?
I think that, I think celebration is like a huge part of why I make things and what, I think because those were the moments in my family that felt most like we were together and we were a family. It was always kind of like marked by those celebrations. Mm. And, yeah, it was a little bit, honestly, chaotic. My childhood was a little bit chaotic and like unpredictable. A lot of moving parts and like moving and so I just feel like maybe I resonated with that, which was like when there was a holiday, we were together. And I think I especially feel that now, even, you know, in hanging out with anybody, I just feel like if you do the smallest things to make a moment special, it's special. And like, that's mm-hmm. what's important. So like even if you're having dinner and it's a Tuesday night and you light a candle, that's a celebration. Like you're just marking those smaller moments. And so, yeah, I'm just trying to figure out how to put that into my work, you know, but.
Mm. Well, you do that. And first of all, I just want to, okay, I took 8 notes while you were saying that.
Okay.
I just lit all the stuff there. But I want to go all the way back to say that, I don't know, you just started off with saying, well, here's why I'm not a storyteller. And I actually just want to push back on that because I think you're a brilliant storyteller. And there's two things. There's one is I think that there's a lot of pieces to stories that make them work and make them what they are. One part of that I've heard you talk about a few times from doing research and just following you over the years is you talk about details a lot. You're a detail mm-hmm. person. And, you know, a big part of storytelling is details. You know, the James Joyce, in the particular lies the universal, and you've put so many details and hidden Easter eggs in your work, and that's obviously a huge part of what you do, and that's storytelling. That is storytelling. So I just like encourage you to like own that. And then the other thing is, in terms of like a full circle story, I want to get into what you're doing now, and I want to talk a little bit about your ghost book, because I know that was a big moment for your career. But I read a review of on Amazon. I always, on my own books, the bad reviews are always so funny because they're always from some perspective of somebody like who just, this is not for them. And somehow yes. they got this thing. And I always thought it would crush me, but when it's some random person online, it just makes me laugh. And they were like, do not read this book. It's super sad and grim at the end. And it's about dying. And I thought, and they're like, don't be fooled by the cover. And I'm like, it's about a ghost. Yeah. What do you think it's like? It ending what? There makes total sense. Death. Like,
yes,
okay.
Totally.
Anyway.
Plus yeah. newsflash, so
that's
we all die.
That's a great circle. Yes. But that's a great circle. And I've heard so many people, their response to the end of your, and we'll probably cut out most of me talking about this, but I just had to stop you in your tracks and be like, you are a great storyteller. And I've heard so many people be touched by that story. And not only that, I feel like, God, we're definitely cutting this out. Okay. Because I'm going on a rant, just trying to encourage you. But you know, I think as an illustrator, illustration is, I think it's a lot like acting. So acting is, you're given the script. And I feel like acting has the celebrity to it. So there's all this like, you know, mystery around it. And they're so appreciated. But I don't feel like illustrators get the same thing. And when illustrators go to talk about their work, which I really think it's writing with pictures, they're asked to talk cerebrally about something that's very intuitive.
Yeah.
And if you do that to actors, they come up empty too. They're like, I don't know what to tell you. A lot of actors are like, I don't talk about it because it's, I can't put it into words what I'm doing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have a lot of thoughts about that just in terms of, well, not talking about it. Whenever I do a show, which I don't do them often anymore, I don't do an artist statement because I don't need to explain to you what I've just made. I've just made it for you.
Yeah.
And second, I feel like illustrators are, they are actors, and I feel like you have to be so empathetic and like understand the emotions of so many characters. You also have to be like a set designer and a costume designer, like a world builder. It is an intense job to create a world, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. It's a lot for sure.
And I guess, that's all storytelling.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I really appreciate your enthusiasm. It does make me feel better. I think quintessential like storytelling sense, when I think like it has to have a plot and it has to be clever, you know, it has to be, you know, have all these specific things, and it doesn't. But when I think about myself as a storyteller, I feel like I come up short, but I do love to world build, you know, and that's a story in and of itself. So anyway, I appreciate
that.
And
I think also maybe in comparison to me, I feel like you are more of a true illustrator. And I don't mean that in a self-deprecating way. I just mean that I think that side of storytelling is a big, huge part of what the illustrator does. And when I collaborate with my wife, she's bringing, most storytelling is some form of collaboration almost in every form. And I think she's bringing what you seem to be bringing, which is a lot of the like richness in the detail, where I'm all big picture. We always say like I'm head in the clouds and she's feet on the ground. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, I think that that's kind of sounds like your side of storytelling. And I also think like you're good at the other stuff too. I want to go back to some of the things you pulled out and just, okay. I wonder what was the one I'm not familiar with is the third one that you said, which is something bones. Tell me about that one.
Oh, it's amazing. I should have pulled it out. It's called, Bony Legs. It's like a Russian folktale story of Baba Yaga, the witch that lives in the, I hope I'm saying that right.
Yeah.
We'll see.
We'll get corrected. It'll be fine.
Okay. But it's about this girl, Sonia, who goes to fetch some butter and milk and some stuff for her aunt. And she goes to this house, and the house is on chicken legs. And she essentially, like, the witch wants to eat her, so she puts her in the bathtub. And essentially this little girl, like, gives her milk to the cat, and she gives her butter to the creaky gate, and she gives her food to the dog. And when the witch goes to eat her, they all help her escape. And then this is kind of this fantastical story. And actually, I read this when I was a young kid, and it had such a huge impact on me. I remember reading it in school, but I remember the illustrations for sure. Like, that is what I knew. I couldn't get it out of my head. And as an adult, when I was about 20 or so, I looked through bookstores and libraries, and I asked librarians, like, I could not find this book, but I knew that it like existed. And finally, actually it was kind of anticlimactic. I was sitting in my office and I kind of brought it up, and this guy was like, oh yeah, it's Bony Legs. He looked it up. Here's an Amazon link. You can just buy it. So, but I found it, and I'm glad I did, because it stuck with me.
Yeah, and that image, I know I've seen that before. I just didn't know it was called that. I remember. What do you think about the illustrations hit you so hard?
I think probably just the detail. And I love the line. I love the line work in it, which is something I'm trying to pull into my work now. It's just, I don't know, it's just something about line that I love. It's just very expressive. And the mark making is just like, you put a line down, you're done. You know, it's like, you just can't really overthink it. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
That makes sense. I feel like I've heard you describe yourself as an introvert. And were you a quiet kid?
Actually, I feel like I'm equal parts both.
Okay.
For sure.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was very social, had a lot of friends, but also could play well, like alone. And yeah, I think I was both, but I'm pretty extroverted, I would say.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. The other thing is that you seem to spend a lot of time in your studio making work alone.
I do that. Yes.
And
which
just
is hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but you say, I mean, are you comfortable doing that? Do you enjoy that?
I do to a certain extent, and not at the capacity I am right now. Like, I'm kind of, I have to find ways to get out and do other things and be part of the community. And I want to collaborate with people in person. And like, so yeah, I think I could do that half of my time, but it's kind of like a big realization when you're an illustrator and you're like, oh my God, I just have to sit here alone and draw for, you know, hours on end. It's kind of lonely. Yeah.
It is lonely.
So, yeah.
When I get in the thick of a big project like that, I feel like often for me, it's daunting at first. I'm like dragging my feet. And mm-hmm. then there's a big chunk of it that is quite kind of zen, where you're like, okay, I fought this, but now I'm like very in the zone and feeling good and like feeling very at peace by doing all of this drawing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you're derailing part of my narrative here, because I was thinking about, I wonder if, it's totally fine, but I was wondering if like Garfield and Bony Legs, if it was possible that you were just a quiet kid and liked that these people could be heard with their stories without ever opening their mouths. And I just wondered if, did you feel like, as a kid, did you feel heard? Did you feel like, oh, I got plenty of attention? And, or do you think making art was possibly connected to, I want to be expressed. I want people to know what's going on in me or pay attention to me or whatever. I don't know if for a lot of artists, that connection is part of the drive.
Yeah. I mean, I heard you talk about this in a recent podcast and I totally connected to it because I didn't feel heard often, like by the people that were important to me. I felt like I was constantly like shifting who I was to them and for them so that I could be close to them. But then I felt so like, well, it came out in anger later on that they didn't really know me. And so I think that's just been something like throughout my life, I just feel really frustrated if people don't know me. So that's really hard. And then if people assume they do with through my work and I don't feel genuine. It's just something that's difficult, I think. But when I was younger, I felt like, I wanted to achieve in school and in my family and prove. And like, if I made good work and I was a good student, then I was, you know, I got attention. And I think, yeah, so making art for me was about giving it to people and performing in front of people or having that connection with people. Like, it wasn't just enough to finish a drawing. I wanted to share it with people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I mean, I totally relate to that. I feel like it's so hard. It feels so sad, but it's hard to get people's attention. Even the people in your life. And then especially certain situations for kids, they find it especially hard to get the attention of their caregivers or the people in their life or whatever. And I do think impressing them with something like a drawing can get them to stop for 5 seconds and look at you and be like, wow, okay, there's stuff going in there. There's stuff going on in there. I didn't know. And it's funny, as a parent, I noticed that of like, when my kids make something, it does always surprise me because I'm like, I didn't know that was in there. And so it is a way of kind of connecting and
Yeah. I don't have any children, but I have a lot of nieces and nephews, and when I'm around kids in general, I just think, you know, as adults, it can feel very easy to like, okay, the kids are here, they're fine, and we're kind of doing our thing. But like, that is a whole world going on inside of them, and they're going to remember that and like internalize that, and they're going to remember one tiny thing you say. And I mean, it's just kind of mind-blowing to think about, you know, kind of connecting yourself back into their position and thinking about how they'll remember that situation, you know?
Yeah. So I wondered if you could tell us the story of how your book, How to Make Friends with a Ghost, went from a boring editorial assignment to a fun, quick personal project to being one of the Globe and Mail's top 100 books in 2017. Not kids' books, books. It was did you know this? You're aware of this?
No, actually, I didn't know.
Go check it out. Your next two novels, it's crazy.
That's insane.
So, how did this book come from some boring editorial assignment way back in the day, 2015, I think maybe is when you started
it. Yeah. So I was doing, we just moved to Nashville and I was, I had to do just an autumn illustration for a magazine, but I was like totally burnt out. I didn't really want to do it. And I was like drawing some stuff and I took my dog for a walk and I was thinking about drawing, I don't know, a girl like hanging out by a fire, maybe with some animals. And I was like, this is so boring. There's just like nothing happening with it. And I thought, okay, well, like what if it's a ghost? And then I thought about them sitting together and I thought, okay, like what would she be feeding it? And I like to take two things, almost like improv-ing, put things together and mash them and see kind of how they fit. And so I thought like, what would it be drinking if it was like, a, you know, what would it be reading? and what would she feed it and what would a ghost actually want to eat? And then I just thought, oh my God, it would probably do this. And then the whole walk, I just thought like, oh my gosh, there, you know, there should be like a guide. And what if a ghost happens to find you, how would you take care of it? Like a pet guide. And then I went home and I just wrote it all down for like hours. And I just thought, well, I'm just going to make a book. I'm going to put it on the internet and just make a little zine. I was like researching, how do I even make zenes? What is that like? What, you know, what is the printing like? And my husband came home and I read it to him, and he is a storyteller. He is like, big picture, it needs to mean something. Otherwise, don't waste your time. Like, you have to feel something. He's very smart with storytelling.
And he's so an English teacher.
An English teacher. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So he really helped me with the end. And like bringing that back around where she dies in the end. And so I printed out like 100 copies and I put it on my website and I sold those 100 copies. And then I got a phone call from an editor, and she had worked with some of my favorite illustrators, which I just like couldn't believe. While I was talking to her, she asked if I wanted it to be a book. I said, of course. And so I launched into that, and then we added more content and redid the illustrations, and the book came out in 2017. So it's kind of funny, like, you know, that the book came out almost four years ago, and I've done a lot of books since, but that is the book that just feels like, well, that was mine. And it was really, I mean, to this day, it's the only one I've written. And since then, it's funny what you talked about in the beginning, feeling like I can never do that again. I spent the last like 3 or 4 years feeling like I have nothing to offer as far as like an author. And just this past year, I've been working on these series of stories where I'm writing, and it's completely separate from the ghost book, but doing a whole picture book series. And it found me in a roundabout way. Actually, it found me in the same way. I was doing a project I didn't really care about and drew these little characters, and I was like, okay, what are these? And then followed that. So anyway, that's kind of how you find them. But I love that. I look back and I love that book. I feel really proud of it. So,
yeah. I mean, it's a gorgeous book. It's great. And the reason I love that story so much is because it starts with this moment of listening to yourself. And I talk a lot about on the show this idea of getting high on your own supply, like making stuff that's to your taste. And I was working with this public speaking coach. Her name is Judy Carter. And I was telling her about my taste idea. And she's like, it sounds like what you're saying is listening to yourself. It sounds like you're saying, and we were working on like, what's my talk gonna be? You know, we were like workshopping ideas and around it. And she's like, it sounds like you're saying, if you wanna be heard, you first have to listen to yourself. And this idea, it got me thinking about, and what the story, your story, what strikes me about it is all these artists want to be listened to, but they don't listen to themselves. Like, why would anyone listen to you if you won't listen to yourself? And I just think it's that moment of listening to your own boredom, listening to and hearing that and be like, this is boring. And being like, okay, well, I'm, and that's your taste telling you like, this isn't cutting it. Well, what would be interesting? And then the inception point of this whole story comes from this moment of paying attention to your own taste and being like, the thing I'm making is boring. how do I make it not boring to myself? And so I just wondered if, and you kind of went into it right now, and I'd love to hear more about it. And maybe you can't say everything if it's not out there in the world, but I wondered how you seem to be going into all of these interesting places creatively. Your style's always adapting. I feel like it's getting richer and richer, and it's going off into its own territory that I don't see anybody making stuff like this and has all these layers. And I just wonder, what does that practice of listening to yourself look like? And maybe you can talk about these new characters, or you can just talk about what it looks like in developing your aesthetic and your world building. I don't know, but
yeah.
How do you hear yourself as you're going to make stuff?
Well, I appreciate those words. I think that it feels like I'm on the cusp of something. It's like terrifying because you don't really like know what that is, but I am, I think I'm just trying to specifically connect to what I loved as a kid. I've been doing a lot of exercises with this artist group that I'm part of, like finding my values and what is my goal with my work. And that's shifted it. And then it's just as far as like technique goes, I just feel like I'm drawn to certain things that I'm not seeing a lot of. And I feel like, and you talk about this on your podcast, just like there's, if you want something and you don't see it, you have to make it. And I feel like there's this kind of balance of this really old, like lived in, worn out, textured, like world that's kind of timeless. And then also this balance of like really playful, like a little bit eerie, imaginative, like childlike. There's just some world I can kind of like feel in my head, and I want to put that out on paper. And I feel like maybe I will be able to do that in, you know, some personal work. But then the stories that I'm working on are, they're very close to home. It's about this mouse and this bee, and they live in this cider press that they've like refashioned into a house, and they live in the woods in Michigan. So it's very me. And the mouse is like a furniture builder. So she salvages old furniture, and she's really like sweet and quiet. And then Miko is the bee. She's very kind of fiery, and she loves to plan parties and celebration. And she's a chef, which is something I'm also super into, is cooking. They just have all these little adventures in their community, and the stories aren't like epic, but they're just about their personalities and the dynamic between them and making the best situation out of like very small instances. And I feel like that is what I am like. And so putting these out I feel like, okay, I've hit the mark. You know, I've like finally figured out how to pull this all together. It took a really long time to do that, but I feel like I'm launching into that territory. So that feels good. And, you know, it's scary too, because I've had to say no to a lot of other things. Like all the picture books that have been coming my way have all been like nonfiction. And, you know, I just feel like if I kept going down that path, I could have jobs, but they're just a bit, you know, it's not something I'm interested in doing. So feels like I'm on the right path. But as far as listening to yourself, yeah, I mean, I guess it takes a lot of work, you know. It's just about trust, really. Like trusting yourself and having the insight to know that you have value in what you think and your story, you know.
Absolutely. And I think you're talking about this. I want to go into you talking about this world in your head and saying, oh, I don't see this in the market right now. I'm not seeing this out there, but I know what it feels like. And I've watched you on your Instagram and all the stuff you're making. I can see you like digging into that. And I just think that requires what I think a lot of people, everybody thinks that the creative work is, oh, it's just too much work. But I actually think the hard thing is, it's work, but you're also drawing. Like the hard thing is the believing in yourself, believing that this thing that I'm seeing and compelled by, it is something. And if I keep like trying to empty it, and I think if you've never done it, the fear, or if it's never worked, that's a huge hurdle. Like you're like, you know, should I try? Like there was a project I did back in the day where I did a new character every weekday for a year. And that entire time, it was the first time I'd ever trusted myself creatively, really. Everything else I'd made up to that time was fine, but it was very trend oriented. Mm-hmm. This was the first time where I was like, nobody's doing this. Nobody, these are not anybody's inspiration of my peers. And I'm just going to do this for a year. I'm going to pour into this. And the going up that first hill of being like, I have no idea if there's anything on the other side of this. Mm-hmm. And then over time realizing like, you know, if you have an experience like the ghost book that you had or just things like that, you're like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So I was right about that. Let me try it again. Yes. And it sounds like you're in that process of, but then you're doing it again. You're like, I'm sure you're feeling that like, was that a fluke though? Like,
yes, you know, because
you're just like, so there, it's always hard. It's always hard trusting yourself and trusting this thing that I think I'm onto something. I have to keep pulling at it and digging at it. Even when I'm like, I haven't even seen the gold yet. I just feel like it's there.
Yes.
I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think throw in like having it be a job or a career, and you have to take that time aside from paying projects, and you have to work and you have to put in hours that go towards something that you have no idea if it's going to pay off or not. And I feel like that is terrifying. And, but I do know, and maybe it's from the ghost book, and maybe it's because I've had that experience one time, thank God I had it, that, you know, like if this feels like so, like I'm getting away with something, like it's so indulgent that I'm like, oh my God, I can't, like, it's just flowing out of you. It's all you're thinking about. That is a good feeling. And that has to be trusted. And you do have to fight the urge to say, like, this is too indulgent. I can't do this. This isn't really work. You know, you have to be able to do that. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Getting away with something, feeling like that. It's so true. It's almost like I tell people, like, think about the movies where you walked out and it changed your life. And you look to your three friends and they're all, you're like, all sobbing, and you're thinking, well, we're all sobbing, it's not that big a deal. And you look over and they're all like, that sucked. And you're like, what? And I feel like, dive into that, because there's something there that that is unique to you. And there were people all over the country that you don't know that had that experience. And that's who you're making stuff for.
Absolutely.
Just real quick, just a pause from the show. I got to ask you a question. Are you like a fabric freak? I mean, that as a compliment, of course, but if you are, then Spoonflower is where you got to be. You can choose Spoonflower fabric by category, from top and trending to modern, traditional, and artistic, by color or by fabric types, like Spoonflower's petal, signature cotton, satin, cotton poplin, fleece, celosia velvet, recycled canvas, and more. Spoonflower even offers organic fabrics, and sample packs are definitely available. Visit try.spoonflower.com/creative-pep-talk for a one-time 20% off promo code and get all the Spoonflower fabric action your space can hold. Hey, it ain't a secret that the internet is super noisy. The algorithm is completely feeling like it's out to get you. And building a thriving practice right now in today's world can be super overwhelming. It's very hard to even know where to start. And that's why we just dropped a new Skillshare class all about how to do just that. How do you build a thriving practice in 2021? What are the steps? We are going to give you a roadmap on how to use tools like social media to your advantage to build a thriving practice, not to get famous, not to blow up, not to go viral. No, none of that. I'm talking about just using it in such a way that it meets your financial goals, your creative goals. This is a different approach to creative social media, and I have found these practices to be super valuable and just a good mindset shift alongside some exercises that you can apply right now. If you're feeling frustrated with your practice, with social media in general, go check it out, skillshare.com/creativepep for a month-long free trial. Okay, I want to go back to you. You're talking about this world, bringing this world out. And okay, I wondered if you could speak to, without insulting anybody, what's the opposite of this world that kind of, because I always feel like there's a, you're kind of, you're become, you know, when you bring something new into the world, it's often in antithesis to what's currently there. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you saying, oh, I'm not seeing this. What is the opposite of what you're seeing? Because I wonder if it's like, I do feel like we live in a world where, you know, the 80s media was so dark for kids that I think people grew up and were like, wash that away. We need to cleanse. These kids have been traumatized by the, you know, never ending story and all this like dark stuff. And I do wonder, and I'm just curious, is that what you mean of like, oh, we lost something now that everything's super clean or new? And it might not even be specifically that. That's an example. What are you not seeing? What are you seeing? What do you, does this, is this a question?
Yeah, 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 that's a question. Okay. Yeah, sorry. I want my answer to not hurt anybody's feelings, like you said.
I know, so okay. I feel like right or wrong or bad or good. It's just your taste and what you want
right,
to see.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, you know what? I just think that there's a newness of things in the art world, or maybe even like, I mean, everything. I don't know. Products that are around or clothes or whatever that I've just never been super fascinated with. Modernity, I guess you could call it, just like the really clean, like things that don't feel like they're gonna last for a long time, or they feel like so specific to a time period, or they're like, I don't know, things that don't feel like, yeah, they're gonna be around for a while. And I just feel like there's something, the things that I'm drawn to often feel you know, aged, like they've been around a couple hundred years. And I just think that there's a, it's like an emotional component to that, you know, like it's surrounding yourself by like old wood or whatever versus like something that's like new and shiny and vinyl and plastic. To me, that it's the feeling of the former that I don't know, like I resonate to. So.
Yeah. I mean, that makes total sense. I feel like in the early like 2000s, there was just all of this vintage stuff and people were like, oh, it, dressing in all stuff from, you know, vintage stores or secondhand stuff. And then I don't know what happened. I feel like the indie scene like just got like so, it became such a caricature of itself that mm-hmm. like everybody was becoming detached and ironic and it was just whatever. And then eventually I feel like we did get to another side where everything is so shiny. Everything looks so good, and you need like I feel like the style now, like the pen boards from that era would have been like all of this old stuff and finding, you know, things that have been around and trying to like be eclectic and all that. And now I feel like it's like slick, modern, expensive, Tom Ford.
Yeah.
I don't even know who that is, but that you know, that kind of thing. And I do think
yes.
you're right about it. Like we need like, let's inject some like history and some like staying power and you know,
yeah.
I think you're spot on with
even
that.
Even like going into a thrift store, going into a vintage store, I come from a small town, and that small town, there's a Salvation Army. They always have gems, just gems. Cause you know, everybody wants like name brand stuff. Nobody wants anything that like this 90-year-old woman dropped off or whatever. And so I used to go in there and just find amazing old things. And now I just feel like I go into the vintage store or thrift stores or whatever, and it's all like just new, you know, it's like somebody just bought it like 4 months ago from Target. And now it's in this thrift store. Like the gems are just becoming more and more rare. I just feel like it's sad to see the stuff that doesn't really last. And anyway,
I completely agree. But it's, I wanted to unpack that a little bit is just the, I just wanted it to be kind of a picture of what goes on inside of an artist as they're wrestling with their own personal taste and what that feels and looks like. And as they're trying to give something to the world that it's not, that's not currently happening. I just wanted
yeah.
people to feel a little bit what that feels like and looks like, because you do it so well. And the work that you've been making, it feels like such an evolution over the years, closer mm-hmm. to this kind of stuff that you're talking about. And I feel like there's a richness to the details that, although there's a lot of analog picture book type styles mm-hmm. out there, I do feel like yours has a depth and a richness that comes from, it's got to come from some of this deeply held taste that you have.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. I hope that comes out more, you know, in the coming books. I hope.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Well, I want to give you one last question, and I just wanted to see, I was thinking about your story, and I was thinking about how so many artists start because they want to connect and they want to be heard. And then hearing you with the ghost story, listening to yourself and that working out. And then I've just, one of the things that I've found so fascinating, I love following you on Instagram. I love your work.
Thanks.
But I also, but I also hate it. No, I'm just
kidding. Oh, thank you.
I'm sorry. I couldn't help it. The way that I worded that sounded like there was going to be a but at the end, but there wasn't.
But it's garbage.
No, I absolutely love it. And not but, and one of the things I find so interesting is that you show up onto that platform in such a different way than I feel like other people do. And I think that it just made me feel like through this process of making stuff, You know, I always think that like artists, a lot of them, they make stuff to become known. And then through making art, they know themselves. And then that becomes mm-hmm. satisfying in a different way than they expected. Mm-hmm. And I feel like as I'm watching you in Japan make this stuff and dig into this art and make all these layers, and you're working, experimenting with all these different things. And it's just, and you can see the evolution. And you just seem so quietly going about this, happy to like dig in, whether people are noticing or not, even though you have a big following. I'm just wondering, my question is, what does it sound like in your head and in your ongoing daily practice of creativity, of hearing yourself? I know I asked that in a different way earlier, but what, I don't know, what you seem to have a piece. Let me word it this way. What did this past couple years, the time in Japan, what did you take from it? What you feel like you quietly know something, and I'm trying to figure out what is it? That's the most blunt way I can ask it.
That's so funny.
Does this make sense at all?
I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. And I appreciate it. And I feel like, okay. Yeah. I think that I've had Instagram for a long time, about 10 years, 11 years, whatever. And I think that you're right in that we build the work and then people come to know us. We come to know ourselves, and it feels amazing, right? We have this sort of audience. But I think that what I felt like was that I had built something and that people came to know me, but it wasn't really me. So that felt very like not right. And so I think that I'm very quiet because I'm sort of like figuring out, okay, this is who I am, and then I can jump back in. And I just want to make sure that I'm showing up being 1,000% myself. And it's taken me a really like long time to figure out who that is and why I love her and what she has to offer and how essentially to not get sucked in by feeling like you should be doing it a certain way, you know? So I definitely like struggle with like Instagram specifically, and there I just took I haven't really posted like since the first of the year. I've been kind of like really quiet on there, and I'm kind of on there, but more so I just feel like there's a whole life going on outside of it, and I need to give that some attention, and I need to like reconnect, and I need to figure out what it is I'm making and what I'm saying. And artists have existed for centuries without having this thing, you know, without having to share on a daily and without having to react and without having to have a like audience or like right in your face all the time. And so I think there's value to that, and we need to step back sometimes and like reconnect with that. And then as far as being in Japan, it's kind of funny. I think now, like in hindsight, so I was there for 2.5 years. I wish that I would have just deleted my Instagram and just been in Japan. And I wish that I could have just taken that in and like come back and learn from it. And I did learn a tremendous amount, but it's kind of funny being over there. I just, you know, there were days when I was just in my studio alone. I worked from home. My husband was at work for hours, and I'm just like working and I'm scrolling through and watching everybody else's life. And for some reason I'm jealous of other people's lives when I have this like amazing experience. So it was kind of like living in two worlds at once, where I was missing everything at home but I was also so far away and loving everything there. And I think that sometimes social media does that to us, you know, where we're like not in our own life. We're always feeling like we're missing out. And so I wouldn't say like I secretly know anything in the background, but I would say that I needed that space and that time to kind of like figure out outside of that, like how I want to approach it. And I think I'm going to come back to it and just be more casual, honestly. Like, I think that's good. I think sometimes we can build it up and think like, oh my God, I have to get really good at reels and videos and this. And I have to like, you know, do it in a certain way. And I have to get good at stories and that just stresses me out. So I think I'll be pretty casual on it coming back and like just letting it be easy. You know, I feel like that's what I did in the beginning. That worked for me and it feels easy. So yeah.
That's really good. I also think it's interesting that you did learn from what, you know, often the things that we learn are the things that we did wrong, and then we do it again and we do it the right way after that. And it seems mm-hmm. like you know, it's, I know it's always, it's painful to have to learn the hard way with things, but having come out of that with Japan and thinking I should have been off Instagram this whole time. Mm-hmm. Well, then taking a break from Instagram is exactly the right step after that.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah.
So you
yeah.
did, you learned it and you took, and now you're doing it. Now you're, I do think you're right. You're going to come back with some, with a piece that you didn't have, even though now you're in Michigan back home. And
yeah,
I'm going to chew on that. I also think it's really, we ran out of time, but I am curious about what made you feel like people don't know you.
Well, I had a meeting with a coach the other day, and I said, I don't want to be a children's book illustrator. I just got to get out of this. And she, but you know, it's like, that's what I am. It's all over right. my website, like yeah. on my bio. And she was like, and I just signed on to these books, and she was like, okay, we got to figure that out. Cause that's, why is that? And I think it's because I feel a little bit like a fraud in the book world. And like I told you in the beginning, I'm like, I'm not a storyteller. I don't tell stories. I'm not of the book world. And so I just feel like there's something about that sort of like umbrella of what we think of when we think of children's book illustrator. And I just think I've kind of wanted to escape that and run. Maybe I feel like too boxed in by it, you know? I'm coming to terms with it. She was like, you know, she kind of gave me some cues on how to think about approaching that, right? Like it's in one of your last podcasts, you talked about like you find a house, but you don't have to keep the house like that. You just arrange yes. the house how you want it.
Yeah.
And this is the 100%. Same thing.
To make what being a kid's book illustrator means to you.
Exactly.
You can tear down exactly. walls and reinvent it. Yes.
Totally. Totally. And I think that I just kind of got stuck in that. And I just felt like, well, this is what picture book illustrations look like and feel like and act like, and this is how you do it and blah, blah. And I just wasn't really interested in a lot of that. And I guess I just, you know, I've done technically sound work for a long time. I think like it's always been part of my practice is to, the technique is important, but like I am drawn to crazy childlike work, like children's drawings and like stuff that doesn't make sense and stuff that yeah. isn't like realistically possible. And I'm like, how can I do that? How can I? So I feel like I'm just not, I don't know. There's just like something there, and I want, for some reason, I just feel like I need people to understand that that is what, not that I'm capable of, but like, I don't know. Just something in there I just feel like I'm not getting across. And so people were like, yeah, I get it. I you know, I see your style. And I'm like, okay, you see a style, but you can't see it. But to be fair, I mean, just in general, I feel like everyone probably feels like they're not totally known. And my husband's like, don't you just think, you know, I feel like we've talked about this before. And he's like, but I don't think you can really know anybody. You know, nobody feels 100% known and seen. And I don't know. So I'm balancing that too, right?
Well, I do, but that's just your problem. I'm very gracious, very grateful, I mean, to you for being so gracious with sharing, because you know, maybe I'm projecting here, but you talking about saying, oh, I went to my coach and said, I don't want to be a kid's book illustrator or author anymore. And then you kind of backpedaling to be like, I'm sorry, maybe you're not, but being like, I'm grateful to do this. And I actually, maybe I do, you know, or just yeah. like trying to cover up the I don't know why that you might be doing that, but I do this all the time.
Yes. I do.
You know, feeling like, and I'm sorry to call you, I feel like I'm calling you out on it. I'm not calling you out.
You're
on
not.
Backpedaling.
No,
I'm just trying to highlight that it's a gracious act, and it's what people need, I think, with podcasts like this, is to see someone with your storytelling chops, your history, the books that you've made, the style that you have, the technical ability to be in your shoes and to know that you still are going to have weeks where you're like, you know what? F this. I don't like this. Nobody. I want to go be something else. I'm going to be a carpenter now. Okay.
Yes.
Like, you know, whatever it is. Like, I think that being just standing by that and being like, yeah, that's how I felt. And I think that there's legitimate reasons why I was discontent, and the discontent of not feeling known. Everything you said, I feel very often. Very often.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I really
appreciate
it.
Thanks for being on the show, and thanks for sharing your story so openly.
Yeah, it was a dream. Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Okay. I hope that you feel as inspired as I did at the end of that chat. Thank you, Rebecca, so much for taking out so much time to chat with me and share so much with the audience. Go check out Rebecca's absolutely incredible illustration work at Rebecca Green Illustration. I'm guessing you're already a fan because her work is just fantastic. Thanks again, Rebecca. I hope you come back again soon. Hey, two quick things. First of all, we still have just a few of the original sketches for the first 250 orders of calendars. We've got a few of those left. Go get yours, creativepeptalk.etsy.com for a 2022 Creative Pep Talk calendar. Keep you pepped throughout the year. Very excited about that calendar. It's full of my favorite art from the past year that we did for the show. And the calendar feels like the album drop, you know, of all my favorite songs that I've written this year, but pictures. And also, we're starting to book up some in-person talks in the new year. So if you have a conference or a team or a school that needs a creative pep talk, we are starting to book those slots out now. You can find out info on how to get in touch at andyjpizza.com/info. Thanks to everybody for listening. Creative Pep Talk is part of the Koloop Podcast Network. The Koloop Podcast Network is a bunch of podcasts that are designed to fuel your creativity. Massive thanks to Y, the band Y, for our theme music, to Alex Sugg for our soundtrack. Thanks to Connor Jones of Pending Beautiful for editing this show so beautifully. And thanks to Sophie, my wife, and Ryan Appleton, my brother, he's not really my brother, my manager, for content assistance. And until we speak again, stay pepped up.